Would you like to be able to start conversations like a pro? Take the Sunday World, your daily dose of what's going on. Do not consume the Sunday World if you're involved in a drug cartel, you're a politician with something to hide, or you've appeared on a reality TV show and care about others' opinions. Consume the Sunday World responsibly. Always read the stories, gossip, and commentary.
Wow, buddy! You look healthy and happy.
Veterinary surgeon and natural pet food pioneer John Burns knows the positive impact a natural diet has on our beloved pets. That's why he developed Burns Pet Nutrition.
Maybe I should try some of your pet food myself. Okay. I'll start with a salad.
For natural, no nasty, wholesome recipes, choose Burns Pet Nutrition. Available from veterinary clinics and all good pet shops across Ireland.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We're back on the road this April with our live show, Cocaine Cowboys. If you want to hear the story of Ireland's love affair with Colombian powder and those who made millions in the gold rush, join us in Galway's Town Hall Theatre on Saturday, 6th of April, Killarney's INEC on Saturday, the 13th of April.
Tickets for Belfast's show have sold out on Ticketmaster.ie, but limited availability remains at ulsterhall.co.uk. That's ulsterhall.co.uk.
There was €1 million worth of cannabis seized in Dublin Port. There was also, last week, a firearm seized in a house in Clondalkin in a separate operation. We're not sure now if that is linked to the family gang, but there was particular focus on the West Dublin area. There was 2 guns as well seized in a Ballyfermot park. One of the guns seized was a semi-automatic machine gun. There's a strong intelligence operation going on at the moment in relation to that.
I'm Nicola Tallant, and you're listening to Crime World, a podcast about criminals, drugs, and the sins of the underworld in Ireland and across the globe.
Multiple gun seizures made this week have been linked to the family organised crime group, while a series of drug and cash raids have meant that it's been a bad week for the bad guys. Today, I'm talking with Niall Donald and Emer Rabbit about weapons, stash houses, and mugshots. This is Crime World, a podcast from SundayWorld.com.
There have been complaints about your glasses.
Yeah.
Emer, he went out onto Talbot Street the other day and found himself a pair of dentures, right?
I saw it on Instagram.
Did you see, I scooped the editor to Sunday Indo who was going to...
Alan English told us that he was just about to put it up on social media these dentures had been found and we scooped him.
Yeah.
On my picture. But he posed for it. But I'm just saying to him, I bet you if he goes out and has a good route around, he'd find a pair of glasses better than what he has left.
Absolutely. And considering the amount of shops we have on Talbot Street that do all sorts, haven't tried very hard to get them fixed.
He had the plaster, which you found on your desk. Gross, by the way.
And he said it was somebody else's, which even
grosser.
Yeah. And then he admitted that it was probably from his glasses in the end.
Obviously, you wouldn't be aware, but Nicola constantly talks as if she's viewable, despite the fact that the vast majority of people listen to the podcast with no vision.
Well, I think anybody listening, not visualizing or not watching this, let's visualize a man with a pair of glasses on with just one arm on them. I haven't seen anything like that probably since the 1980s.
Now, I hope this clip of you now goes up on Instagram on Crime World.
And you see, all it'll prove is how humble and modest I am and how unconcerned about my appearance I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Relative to some.
Well, I also think that you have to have a bit of pride in yourself.
I agree with you. Yeah.
You're a senior editor, Niall, and you're going around with only one arm on your glasses.
And
they could do with a bit of a wipe as well. I don't mean to really call you out.
Glasses, and he never bought 2 pairs of them, which I think is absolutely
I know. Anybody from Specsavers is listening,
yes, we could be sponsored by Specsavers. You get it. I got my glasses in Specsavers pairs.
Yeah.
And I have sat on one pair, but I still have these ones, so it's grand.
Exactly.
No, I'm being very busy and I'm going to go into next week. I'll be just looking so absolutely
effing important that he can't get his glasses.
I know. Most people take a week off to go to Spain. I was taking a week off to go to Specsavers.
You know, both of you know as my underlings how hard I work.
Yeah, I know.
You're going to be on your own tomorrow because we're going to Galway.
I know. Yeah. I was saying to Niall, would you trust him driving in a storm?
He's not driving, I'm driving.
Okay, yeah, because I was going to say that's a bit worrying.
No. I absolutely would not trust him driving in a storm or pretty much driving in any which way. It's the way you can't sort of see pavement or work out pavement road pavement.
Yeah.
Well, I hope he's not wearing those glasses anyway if he's going to be
driving. Dodgy eye.
Yeah.
So we've all had a busy week. It's Friday afternoon here and I actually just pointed out in a really academic fashion that it was a good week for the goodies and a bad week for the baddies. Yeah. There was so many seizures.
So many seizures, yeah. So very philosophical of you. But yeah, no, there were. It was a particularly busy week. There were 10 firearms and I think 5 million euro worth of drugs seized over the last week. They're all in Dublin as well, mostly in West Dublin. But I suppose the one that we're focusing in on was the seizure on Wednesday in Clondalkin. There was 4 homes raided and I think there were 7 firearms seized. I think 200 grand worth of drugs and 100,000 euro worth of cash. And there was also a lot of money frozen in a bank account. And of course, that's been linked to the family gang who we've obviously written a lot about. They're a notorious heroin dealing gang in West Dublin.
That's a lot of firearms. A
lot of firearms, yeah. A lot of firearms. There was 3 other firearms seized in separate raids.
Also linked to them.
I don't think that's linked to them now, but it was kind of, that was the most prominent in the week. But the other raids weren't linked to them as far as we're aware, but this one is obviously the biggest of the week.
And they are the top targets of the Drugs and Organised Crime Bureau. That has been sort of well said. Yeah. They are...
Not just
worth how much?
They were
20 million a year?
20 million turnover at one point, and that was probably before recent years, which you would imagine that it's escalated. I think as well as heroin, which they really made their name and became the number one suppliers in the country without a shadow of a doubt, they've also become major players in the cocaine trade, you know, particularly in the last few years. And also I think you see those firearms that they are in the firearms business in a big way as well. The family, despite their size and the scale in which they operate, they haven't been linked to a lot of gun murders, though, but they are heavily involved in the gun business as well.
Are they weapons stealing? Or?
Well, that is definitely something that they've been linked to, you know, to weapons stealing, because 7 firearms would be a lot for, you know, to have on for your own personal use, even for a gang operation. And again, you see, even with these seizures, there's a very specific MO. You wrote about it. Was it 2016, was it?
That I wrote about it.
When you did that 8-day special, I think, on the family.
It was certainly in the, maybe it was a little bit later than that, maybe 2018, because it was kind of focusing on them because they had made hay with the fall of the Kinahans and with the feuding that had gone on. And while resources were dragged towards the North Inner City and towards the kind of the takedown of the Kinahan mob here, they had sort of
escalated
and taken over.
And you see, even back then, and that's 6-7 years ago, whatever it is now at this stage, they had a very specific modus operandi where they were storing guns and drugs in, mostly in people in the middle of addiction. They were being stored all in West Dublin locations, and they really had a method that they used that was quite different from the Ginnahans. Like, it's also believed, and I think has been shown, and some of this we can't get into very specifically because there's court cases ongoing, but they have a different method of supply than the Ginnahan gang. I mean, a lot of the other gangs in Ireland ultimately relied on kind of that same super cartel in a broad sense, but the family seem to have had their own suppliers, some of them through the UK, some of them through Turkish mafia gangs based across Central Europe. And, you know, that while they were using various methods to bring the drugs in, they also seem to have sort of specialised in bringing drugs in on planes. And there are court cases ongoing, but that seems to be a whole, they were kind of a whole separate network, I suppose.
They've never left their area.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're not like, even though they are now sophisticated enough, I imagine, to operate or direct from afar, they have remained within the West Dublin area, where they have this control, even though they don't murder people.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they've kept their heads down. Yeah. They're known for doing business among themselves and obviously not getting involved in anything that might bring too much
heat on them,
yeah.
But isn't it amazing how, you know, what probably started off as a tiny little operation has become, I mean, we're talking, they were valued at being worth, whenever I wrote that piece, which may have been 2018, which is now 6 years ago.
It is.
Thank you. Hey, well, God, I got that sum right. They were at that point valued at about 20 million turnover a year, which is an estimate. I mean, it's so difficult to pick a figure from the sky, essentially. But that had come from a kind of an investigation into their network and what was suspected to be their annual. So that's 26 years ago. You're talking about they could have turned over around 80 million.
Yeah. Well, they could have turned over.
I overstretched myself.
6 by 20 would be 120 million.
Plus the 20. That yeah, 20. Yeah. No, 120. Thank you. Yeah. What did I say?
80. Wasn't
such bad. It wasn't that bad.
It was. It was really, really poor.
That's really what remedial.
Were you in remedial maths? No. Were you Emer?
No, I did ordinary
maths. I actually wasn't either, which is extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah, I think is it hard to do foundation maths? Maybe not.
I'd find it hard now to do it. I've lost any little bit of skill I had with it. It's just, it absolutely blindsides me.
Yeah. That's why you have your understudies like Miles.
But his goofy glasses.
But I mean, I think the family gang have generally, when they have had these seizures and they have had these, there's been major drug seizures over the last number of years, always linked to them, but it never seems to go up the line. That there tends to be people that have sort of really are the stores of the drugs or are caught red-handed. There haven't been the middle management of that gang haven't come before the courts.
No.
And certainly not the very top level of the gang. That said, there are some court cases ongoing and there is also major investigations by the Criminal Assets Bureau that are ongoing that are targeting people at the top of that.
They're trying to dismantle the family. I mean, this is not something that can happen overnight. This is a gang that has been 20 years plus in the making. You know, they're quite sophisticated. They've their money laundering arm. They have their connections with the Turkish and European suppliers. And they're dealing in all sorts of drugs and guns. So it's not something that's going to happen overnight. But it's this targeted, repeated...
Yeah,
kind of, they come back for more, the Gardaí, they keep coming back for more and they do chip away and they do eventually. I mean, there's going to be one winner in this, you know, war between the guards and the family, and it'll be the guards. In the end of the day, it'll be the state, which we found over and over again. But Emer, I suppose on that, those searches came up with the goods. I mean, that's really good intelligence to know when to go into those properties. We know that the family use a lot of properties in the area and they probably, you know, create stash houses in homes that would be seen as, you know, being lived in by somebody who might be just like a street dealer, if even.
Well, that's
so
it,
to have that targeted to come out with that bounty.
Yeah, it's a lot. And there was obviously millions of euro worth of drug seized this week. It was, I think, the main haul in terms of the Clondalkin family linked one was the guns, but there was €1 million worth of cannabis seized in Dublin port. It was hidden in garden supplies and there were actually a person has appeared before the courts this morning in relation to that. So there was massive seizures this week. There was also last week a firearm seized in a house in Clondalkin in a separate operation. We're not sure now if that is linked to the family gang, but there is particular focus on the West Dublin area. There was two guns as well seized in a Ballyfermot Park. So, you know, it has been a good week for the Gardaí.
Very much so.
You know,
I mean, that will make it, you know, if they continue in that fashion, I just can't think this year of big firearm seizures, obviously. Sometimes they will get a kind of a weapons arsenal and warehousing or something, but that's going to make for really good figures at the end of this year, even those 2 weeks alone that you're talking about.
Yeah, and you can see the pictures. We have the story obviously up on sundayworld.com. It's no mean.
Yeah.
You know, it's the hall is quite impressive looking, and even like one of the gun seized was a semi-automatic machine gun, you know, so it's serious business. And obviously there's, you know, a strong intelligence operation going on at the moment in relation to that. There was no arrest that we know of as of yet in terms of the family linked operation, but there were arrests in relation to some of the other seizures as well. And in two cases, there's two men appearing before the court. So it's obviously an ongoing operation.
I suppose what happens in these investigations is sometimes they will hold off and wait for direction from the DPP when it comes to firearms.
I mean,
we know that there's sort of ballistic investigations into those firearms, and they will send them off to experts to see if they can prove if those firearms being used for any murders, you know, how long they've been on the scene. Isn't there a record ballistically with the way the bullet comes out
there
of the chamber?
Yeah, it's a kind of like something like a fingerprint is it's described, and you see it all the time. I mean, we've heard of guns being seized and they will be able to link it to a murder over a decade earlier because it's basically like a fingerprint. I mean, interestingly as well as finding the guns and money, they also seized recovered tracker devices again, which we've seen.
Been used, yeah.
Yeah, and the tracker devices, if you look at some of the hit attempts on the Hutch faction, those tracker devices ultimately yielded huge amounts of information over a period of time, because they can then be triangulated with phones.
You can then track the tracker it's been.
Yes. Yeah. Even Mr. Nobody, Declan Brady, was ultimately undone by that very recently, where they were able to show his phone was next to a tracking device. So those that sort of evidence that came to court almost 7 or 8 years after it was seized. So phones and tracking devices.
The tracking devices are used for, you know, one of two things: either to put on a car of a target that they want to find an opportunity, or build up some sort of, you know, intelligence on what their activities are during the week to try and find an opportunity to kill them. Or in the case of Bomber Cavan, I don't know why it was the first time I really properly considered it, he used to track his own drugs and his own money.
Yeah. So they're tracking.
Make sure that they were where he thought they were supposed to be.
Okay.
So nobody was ripping him off along the way as the money was making its way back to Holland, or the drugs were making their way into the UK.
And again, the family have it. So, I mean, what you wrote about at the time, they used these kind of vulnerable people who rather than trusted associates to do a lot of the movement. So it may be that the tracker devices are used to keep track of their product.
When it's not
in trusted hands.
Exactly.
So that those things as well. And we saw this in all of the major investigations into the Kinnan cartel. What they do is they get a tracker. Then they have to go canvas CCTV off all the businesses along that route. They have to go in. A lot of businesses or houses, certainly in certain locations, will say, I don't want to give it to you. So they have to go to a judge, get a warrant, go back, seize the thing correctly. Then they have to look through it, try and match the times up. Then they have to try and match that with mobile phones. And all of that takes a huge amount of time. Mm. But we saw the huge results that it did yield over time.
Yeah,
especially in some of the feud murder trials.
Exactly.
It's obviously an indication of a serious outfit that you're dealing with.
Isn't
as
it?
Well.
Yeah.
And the results of €67,000 worth frozen in a bank account. So again, it indicates that
you'll have the cab coming in now, having a look at where else that bank account links.
And absolutely, and I'm sure there's going to be people.
Yeah,
you know, there's obviously
there's going to be people who are going to be
implicated there. You know, it's kind of shows the scale of.
I'm feeling actually the Criminal Assets Bureau are already on the. Yeah, they are on the
family
case. Yeah, they sometimes do a multi-pronged. Just a conversation I had. I was on a show on the BBC in the North earlier this week. And they were talking about mugshots.
Yeah.
Slightly different now, but nonetheless. So the PSNI were saying it was their policy basically not to give out any mugshots. They'd take each case by, you know, and they were asking me basically about, you know, what it's like to be sort of reporting without this facility. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but I think, right, you're here. You're pretty much dealing with three different jurisdictions when you're looking for information about cases. And you have the NCA in the UK, you have the PSNI, and you have the Gardaí Síochána. The NCA are the best.
They are the best. Yeah?
Gold medal to the NCA. Yep. Because when they have a conviction after trial, yeah. they provide you with the mugshots,
yeah.
with the information,
recordings,
often videos, yep. you know, arrest videos, raid videos, pictures from raids.
Yes, sort of social media pictures and
all
everything.
Of that, right? Yeah. So we love the NCA.
Yeah.
Clap, clap, clap to them.
Why wouldn't they want to show their good work as well? You know, because it's obviously a win
exactly.
for them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I think. Why wouldn't they?
Because of, so that, I mean.
With the Gardaí Síochána, who I have to say, but they're in second place of a very bad 2 and 3 lot.
I would say that they are, yeah, they're definitely ahead of the PSNI.
They're ahead of the PSNI because while they also don't probably give out mugshots and stuff like that, they are certainly providing you, you're sitting on the news desk, you're seeing the information, the press releases are coming in. They're busy with their information, but they're giving stuff. Are they doing any follow-up on convictions?
Well, they probably aren't doing as much as the NCA for sure.
But you've seen
they, like in terms of social media, they, for example, putting out the pictures of the guns. I mean, that has become more and more prominent. Mm. Putting out pictures of the seizures of drugs, yeah. you know, even doing regular updates and local updates on their social media channels. The guards have really changed their attitude.
And Emer, how does that help with the job? Because the website is a monster.
It is, yeah. And it's reliant on live breaking news. So I suppose, as Mala said, they have an Instagram account now that's quite busy. And you do get the quirky little stories about, they seem to like putting up the stories about, you know, learner drivers who have tested positive for cocaine and are driving unaccompanied and things like that.
I've seen some of those sort of things.
You do get that. And you do get with the drug seizures, a lot of them do go up on their channel. Sometimes you're like, well, you're not just doing attach it to the email.
Yeah.
So we can save it in. But no, it obviously does help. But they're,
and obviously the likes of what we're after talking about there, the gun seizures. So they have given out pictures of the guns. But they're not saying these are linked to the family gang.
No.
This is our own information, our own sources of journalists.
Yeah, but however, they have improved even in that. They will say this is part of an operation targeting an organised crime gang in Dublin, for example.
Yeah.
So they do give a bit more information than they used to, which they never used to do.
Yeah.
So they have.
They've improved from what basis, do you recall? Because, I mean, you were on the Herald news desk back in.
Oh, yeah. And it'd be like getting an interrogation when you ring to ask a basic question about a road crash or something like that. So, no, they have improved. I think the social media aspect of it in particular has improved. But I do always feel like there's a kind of almost aura of mistrust or something there.
Mm.
And I feel like they could utilise the media better.
Yes, exactly.
You know?
And I mean, when you look at the NCA, we were only talking about it at lunch, and Europol, they're producing their own podcasts now about their investigations. Yeah. They're actually creating content for themselves, videos and all the rest of it. It's the way forward. But the guards, I think, what I feel is they have, I'm not like looking at the stuff coming in on the news desk. It's obviously getting better and it's been pumped in.
Yep.
So, and that helps you. And it also is public interest. What are they doing? I mean, they're being paid on the taxpayer's dollar. But what they are doing, I thought recently, is providing people for interview quicker. So if you're saying that you know you're interested in, say this operation is finished and they have jailed people, because really everybody's only comfortable with cooperating properly when that happens, when you have a conviction, when you're not going to risk doing anything for a forthcoming court case or anything like that. But they are providing good interviewees of late.
They are, and
press trained and.
Because, of course, you used to get it, like, and it's been the subject of many sketch shows, hasn't it?
Yeah.
The vehicle, of course.
Yeah.
Famous. So you have, David McSavager or whatever, like, they've that kind of. So you used to have the local guard saying, you know, there'd be somebody is after doing some incredibly violent and risky crime, and all he'd say was a vehicle was spotted leaving the scene.
Yeah.
And so they, but I mean, they are changing and engaging. The PSNI are very, very difficult to deal with,
they
I have to say.
Are
and I mean, even
difficult.
Even
and
just.
We've seen that obviously last week with the Jeffrey Donaldson story.
Yeah.
You know, to get it, you know, yeah, the. They are.
So, what is their problem? Is it a mistrust? Is it?
It is.
Are they trying to be?
Well, do you see the
PC?
The history of policing in the north is so different than everywhere else. You know, it became a political football. Obviously, the RUC were utterly mistrusted by half the community up there. The PSNI were a new branch of that. And instead, unlike, you know, that kind of separation of powers, they became a police force that was particularly responsive to politicians. And as a result, I think they became very conservative and PC in terms of what they share, because they're so vulnerable to criticism in everything they do. From
they need to loosen up, if you ask me.
Well, yeah. They may be.
What about the press releases from the PSNI? Do you see them? Do they come in directly to you?
They come into our general email, or they come, yeah. Our reporters up the north would get them as well. But I feel like they send out, like they would tend to put a lot of their stuff on Twitter as well. Yeah. But it's all just based on what their needs. I don't think there's much cooperation.
It's all about appeals. We want to know exactly, if somebody will come forward with dash cam footage, that kind of stuff.
Exactly. And you don't see photos much. And there doesn't seem to be much of an open relationship in terms of, I don't know if they check out media queries as often as, in fairness to the guards down here, you need a specific day and time, but they will look into it for you. Whereas I don't know if that happens up the north. And I think they close.
So the real problem we have as a Sunday paper is that they're not, they're very, very, like it's crime is a 9 to 5, day business.
Seriously.
Especially in the area that the PSNI are dealing with.
Exactly, how crazy.
Yeah.
And does nobody even leave, is there not even a mobile number that can ring for emergencies?
It's very difficult to
get. It's like the Carlsberg complaints line.
I just couldn't believe it. I think it was my first year in the Sunday World and it was a murder on a Saturday, and I was told by the reporter up there, sorry, the press office aren't coming back to me because they're closed. And this was an actual murder. Yeah. So I couldn't believe that. So
I mean, one thing the guards have been doing recently, and it's always been a huge source of controversy, and rightly so, has been we've had an awful lot of road tragedies this year alone. I mean, everybody will know of them and have seen them. What has happened in recent times, and I think it is a much better system, is that the guards will provide a picture of the victims.
Yeah.
And they provide that on the basis that reporters aren't going to family members looking for pictures. And that, I think, has been quite successful.
Yeah.
Also, people are not being named.
Uh-huh.
You know, all the media will name the victims together with a picture provided by the family through the guards. And that has been a... We've heard people, and every newspaper person must have a little moment of going, is this right?
When
people go looking for pictures under those circumstances. Yeah. So I think that's been a really progressive thing.
But turn that on its head to the mugshots, which is the point of this, because this came up in the north. I actually don't even know how it came up. Maybe
it was to do with somebody being released from prison, wasn't it? And who there was never been a picture of.
There'd never been a picture. Maybe they had a mugshot.
The victim wanted a picture of the person put out, as far as I remember.
They said it was their policy not to put out mugshots. Now, both myself and another journalist from Scotland who were on talking about it were sort of saying, you know, there's so many reasons that you probably should. Firstly, justice has been served. So you're not looking for the mugshot like in the States when someone's arrested.
Yeah.
Like the States is a completely different ballgame. Yeah. I mean, the States is kind of Wild West when it comes to media, isn't it?
It is. Anything goes, really.
Anything goes.
Scary.
Because their libel laws are so different. So we're not just governed by the Gardaí and, you know, what's your favourite thing? The data, the data protection rights.
No,
we are governed in Ireland by, and the Northern Ireland, our colleagues are governed by press councils, ombudsmen, all the rest of it. We have signed up to agreements. We have strict libel laws. Mm. We get something wrong, we're down in the forecourts, right? Yeah. So that's the way it goes here. The States is a complete, there's no point in even trying to compare us, because as soon as somebody is arrested, they're out there.
Well, you remember
Donald, straight away, his
mugshot. Do you
remember the guy who was arrested and he became like a model because he was so good looking?
Yeah, he married some.
He became a celebrity because of his mugshot.
In America?
Yeah. Do you remember the good looking criminal? Yeah. He married some, but anyway.
Probably ended up in a dating show or something over there.
Probably did, or sort of Big Brother or something. But anyway, but the point of the mugshots is, on a more serious basis, that so the public, the whole country can't squeeze into a courtroom. You know what I mean? I know justice is done in public, but there is a certain amount of people who have the time, the ability, the facility, whatever, to get into that courtroom and to sit in the public gallery. It's a tiny amount, probably 20 people. So the media are there then to record it for the other 6 million or whatever it is, people out there. And I think that a photograph of somebody convicted of a crime should be given out in the public interest.
Yeah.
We don't have to then, as a media, go around scrabbling around, looking through Facebook photographs. We have the same thing on the other side, victim or perpetrator. We get it wrong, and it's if it's a perpetrator, it's a disaster.
I think there's a very strong case to be made for it. Remember, like, if you commit a crime and you're a criminal and you go to court, like, you give up your privacy because it, what happened is heard in court.
You lose it.
Yeah, you lose it as a result of your criminal conviction, effectively. Mm-hmm. And, you know, why should your image not be a part of that? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's part of, if you do the crime, you do the time, and part of that punishment. And you hear it all the time in courts. Judges will say, well, I gave him a year off because of all the publicity surrounding the case, and it's going to affect him for the rest of his life. They actually take that into account in court all the time. People find that very annoying, but that is the way it is. So I think in fairness, a picture.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's...
And you see, like, back before the criminal courts of justice, the new ones were opened, we were all down in those old court buildings, and usually the custody or people came in and out the front door, and there was an opportunity for the photographers to capture an image as they were coming in and out of court. The new courts of justice were built, and anybody in custody is driven in underneath them and brought up into the court. I mean, you're not legally allowed to take a photograph within the building. You can only take it outside.
Photographers made careers from standing in the third or fourth floor of Greek Street flats. Yeah. They shoot in the back of the Bridewell,
Every
Saturday,
Or now they're taking advantage of our COVID at times and wearing masks and
putting the hoods up. They're still at that. You still see photographs every week of somebody coming out of court with the full gear on.
No. But I do think that, I know Niall was saying that, you were saying that they do offer up spokespeople after the fact, but it isn't that often, and they don't do it the way they do in the NCA, where they put out a statement, particularly on a big case.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's an Irish thing, because we don't really like to blow our own trumpet or pat ourselves on the back as much. But I do think that it's something that they, particularly with the high profile criminals, gangland criminals.
This is it. And it's the amount of years and money that goes into them. I looked back on a story recently about 2016 and what it was going to cost, this new crackdown on organised crime. That year alone was 100 million, budget, right? Yeah. That is a lot of money. Where is it going? When you see a conviction at the end of it. Now, when I went over to the UK for the conviction of, he pleaded guilty, Bomber Kavanagh, on a practical level as a journalist, right, I came away with, from the courtroom, I was given what was essentially the book of evidence. All the journalists who were there were given it. This wasn't a kind of a under-the-counter thing. It wasn't a secret deal. In it were photographs inside Bomber Kavanagh's house when they raided, showing the level of bling, I suppose, that they had. There was photographs of the handbags. There was photographs of the couches where they went down and found 10 and 20,000 in wrapped up in notes. There was a structure of the group, a tree of who was at the top of it and where all the other people were. There was photographs of the machinery that he had, you know, manipulated so as he could use it to transport the drugs in and the money back out of the country. There was the full sort of... the charges in their proper language that were put to them. And then there was the full detail of where the case had started and how it had culminated and how they had built this case against him. So I brought it home, probably on the Ryanair flight, which will be heavier than my bag, right? And what came of it was I got a very good understanding of that investigation, where it started, how it operated, you know, the amount of kind of levels of resources that went into it. Did a 3-part podcast here, the story, the long read story of Bomber Kavanagh. That was a couple of years ago. There was a documentary made, but it was all really accurate information.
Yeah.
And they followed up with they provided me with, at the time, Matt Horne, who was the deputy director of the NCA, and one of the actual on the ground investigators was provided for me for interview.
Why wouldn't you want that out there?
Why wouldn't you?
It's such a long time to work on and gather that evidence, and it's in the public interest as well to know what these people are capable of.
Totally.
I mean, what about the Regency tapes which we listened to? Like, you know, is there any reason that they
weren't released.
Well, is there any reason why they wouldn't be released?
Well, there is, because the courts were asked at the time by a media organisation, maybe it was ours, for the transcripts, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
And because they weren't asked for at a particular time in the courts, the judges denied giving out the transcripts. Yeah. Now, between all the journalists that were there typing frantically, we managed to put together, I think, between everybody,
most of it.
Yeah. And most of it is there. But the actual tapes released, no. I think you can apply to the courts for that kind of stuff.
Well, you won't get it.
Separate agency,
like,
though.
Is there a reason why, like, is anybody, you know, it's been heard in court, it's done and dusted, you know.
I think it should be given.
Yeah, is there any logical reason, is there any damage to be done, for example, by those tapes?
Now, I suppose in that case, when you think about it, there was no conviction.
There wasn't, but I mean, they've been heard.
They have been heard in court, yeah.
I'm just saying, anyway, I wonder, will...
Do you think they might need them in future?
Well, that could be it as well.
And
but that's just a specific we're talking about in those tapes. There has been other stuff that, I mean, there were certainly recordings done in the plot to kill Gary Hanley, which I heard, including Alan Wilson having conversations with Joseph Kelly, his co-accused. They were waiting outside Gary Hanley's house to shoot him, and they were having conversations about what they were buying the kids for Christmas. It was extraordinary.
That is stuff that the NCAA do release, I mean.
But I've heard that, and I have to repeat how I've heard that again and again. But for people to hear that, I think it gives you an incredible insight when you hear that
and
to what it's like, that world, and what you're dealing with, and how normalised murder is in it.
Yeah, and it really does have an impact. And that's the stuff the NCAA, I suppose, look, will people be ringing in crying, poor old journalists having to work too hard to get pictures? Do you think we'll be?
Well, I was going to say we might be putting the Sunday World out of work, because
poor journalists can't even afford a pair of glasses.
Because how many stories we do per week on, you know, knocking first on the picture. Doors of criminals and getting first pictures. So maybe.
There's always that. But I suppose, in a way, you still have to package what you'd get into a proper story, be it audio, visual, or the written word, which still remain skillful.
As well, like, you see over time that because media organisations are shrinking, they have less resources and less time, it's going to be incumbent on the guards and other branches of the state to actually sell their stories to the media in the way that they didn't used to have to do, because the media just aren't able to do what they once were, if you know what I mean.
But like, I did a broadcast course years ago, and I remember the beginning of it was like a very eminent broadcast. She'd worked in RTE and she'd worked in the BBC, and she ran this course. And she started it off by telling us that 95% of what happens on radio every day on these talk shows is coming from PR.
Yeah.
So it's the people out there feeding that.
Yeah.
And of course, when you think of that, doesn't that make so much sense?
It does.
Maybe 5% of it is a radio show having gone out and generated their own news. So news in the background, all sorts of news, not just crime, is generated obviously by something occurring or something, you know.
Yeah.
Take away crime now for a second, a product.
Well, politics as well. Like, all that. Politics contact political parties or spin doctors.
But should they have advisors and spin doctors and PR people to push
But that doesn't happen when it comes to the guards, you know?
No. Although there are a lot of Garda statements coming in every day. Not every day, but like very regularly. And they do probably end up on our websites a lot more than they would have in the past when you just had papers, because that was when people were, you know, had more time to investigate things, and, you know, they would want more. They wouldn't be happy just to, whereas now the basic seizures are going up online.
Very
so the guards are probably doing well out of that.
They certainly are.
Ordering their investigations and getting appeals out there.
And the media, and in particular websites, are a hungry monster. They need to be fed constantly during the day. Yeah. You guys were constantly saying, like, it's just never ending.
You can't just have one good story and leave it there. You have to have...
Keep changing it, keep moving it. And you know yourself as a consumer of it, if you go onto the website, it's the same story.
Yeah, exactly. And people are interested in those Garda seizures, aren't they? They do. We see your traffic that they do. You get a little bit of a
People have a, you know, there'd be a local traffic as well for 10 grand in County Westmeath. There'd be, do you know what I mean?
Is that like your man down the road?
Where are they?
Have
they given an address on that? But you were the same here in the big smoke. We like to know where it is. If something happens in your local area, aren't you?
No, I know. Now if something happens in Clondalkin, the family can't go be.
No, but if something happens out in stalky or something like that.
Yeah, well, yeah, that would be...
Everybody's sending on WhatsApp messages and, you know. Yeah. But anyway, so yeah, look, it was a busy week and... That's a kind of a, wait, maybe we'll be heard someday, our little complaints about, I mean, we're actually, you know what I mean? We're just
normal just people, help. Are we? Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. Look, maybe it's sort of that kind of thing. Maybe that refusal to release that mugshot opens up a conversation and starts to make people, I don't think we're going to have marches on the street backing journalists to get the mugshots Gardaí or whatever, but it's maybe worth just having that discussion to explain to people.
Exactly.
I think people not working in, you know, there's things, it's like any job you do. Yeah. Mm. You do it and you think everybody understands it, but they don't understand what goes on in the background.
We constantly get a thing of why, you know, you're not putting up a picture of him because he's a relative of that person.
Yeah.
But of course, once we have a picture, we put them up.
Once if
there's
them.
A court case, you know
of
what
course.
I mean?
Of course, yeah.
So, but
yeah.
And of course, we often, the reason we don't have, we have pictures of some and not others is because they might, generally because they get bail, come out the front door and somebody takes a picture. If they're just put straight away, you'll never get a picture, you know? So that is that reason.
Yeah.
But there's always inspires conspiracy theories that you pictured this guy and you didn't picture this other guy, you know?
Yeah, and I think journalists accepted that's part of their job, that they have to get, you know, if they want their story to be more prominent, they have to get pictures and get them verified and all that kind of thing. But I guess your point is that if there are mugshots there available and the Gardaí, the case is done, why wouldn't you want that out there so people can know what they're dealing with?
Exactly, you know? And give the media the correct information to work with rather than, you know, sometimes you're scrabbling around, you're sort of, I mean, mostly you have your own contacts and you always still will. But the factual information, like what I found really useful from the NCA and the bomber case was the dates.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Yeah.
The locations of where raids were happening. So you weren't kind of, you know, and anyway, then you put your story, it's your own knowledge that makes the story come alive. But you're getting the good factual details. Anyway, we're giving the kind of the Gardaí are coming in with a silver medal on this, and I'm afraid if it's a medal for everybody, the PS and I are getting bronze, aren't they? But
at least they're getting something.
Getting a team participation.
They're getting participation.
It's more, it's more than we get from them a lot of the time, to be honest.
Yeah. Anyway, right. Listen, thanks a million, guys.
Thanks, Nicola.
You've been listening to Crime World, a podcast from SundayWorld.com, produced by Ian Mullaney and edited by me, Nicola Tallant. Research assistant is Clodagh Meaney. If you like this show and love true crime, leave us a review, or why not download the free SundayWorld.com app for lots more stories from Ireland and across the globe.
Would you like to be able to start conversations like a pro? Take the Sunday World, your daily dose of what's going on. Do not consume the Sunday World if you're involved in a drug cartel, you're a politician with something to hide, or you've appeared on a reality TV show and care about others' opinions. Consume the Sunday World responsibly. Always read the stories, gossip, and commentary.